From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, and filling in for Peter Sagal, Mike Pesca.
Thank you. Thank you all so much. That is very kind of you today. Thank you. We do have a great show for you today. Violinist Itzhak Perlman will join us. But first, I am Mike Pesca. I'm filling in for Peter this week. I work for Slate.com, hosting a daily podcast that is starting next month. If you recognize my name, it's because I've covered sports for NPR. If you are unfamiliar with the idea of sports on NPR, they go like this. A screaming line drive over the shortstop's head, screaming like the cry of the rhinoceros beetle, whose Amazonian habitat is slowly eroding due to the effects of deforestation. But we invite you to give 110% when you call in to play our games. We're at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hello, you are on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Anna, and I call from Toronto, Canada.
How are you, Anna?
I'm good. How are you? I'm trying to speak slowly so I can understand.
Right, because the Canadian accent is impenetrable to our ears.
Yeah, I'm Italian, so it's all mixed up.
Oh, an Italian-Canadian. What do you do up there in Canada?
I do visual effects for movies.
What does that mean?
I do explosions, gore, all the things that you don't see when you go see movies.
Okay, for movies, right? You're sure about it. Okay, good. Yeah. What's the stupidest thing you've ever had to explode?
I had to kill a lot of Vikings lately.
Explosions.
I had demons.
You've killed Vikings? You've killed demons?
Yeah.
What's your harder to kill?
I think they're Vikings.
Well, Anna, let's introduce you to our panel. First up, a humorist and author whose book, Alphabetter Juice, is out in paperback now, Roy Blunt Jr.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, hello.
Next, writer at the Houston Chronicle, Kiri O'Connor. Finally, a humorist who will be appearing along with Peter Sagal at Storytellers on a Mission at the Latches Theater in Brattleboro, Vermont on April 19th. It's Tom Baudet.
Hello, Anna.
Hello. We're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Are you ready, Anna?
Yes, I am.
All right, here's your first quote.
This is not another Cold War that we're entering into.
That was President Obama talking about another Cold War that we're entering into with what country?
Russia.
That is correct. This week, President Obama finally got tough on Russia. He gave them the strongest tongue lashing yet. And if that wasn't enough, he helped to kick them out of the G8. Now, dismissal from the G8 is quite a shot across the bow. You know, Russia can't now use other countries' workout gym for free. There's no discount at participating Olive Gardens.
They need a loose cannon in the G8. Yeah. Get Libya or North Korea or somebody in there. Right. Have a little fun. Come on.
Right. Yeah, that eighth chair should rotate.
Right. It's
for excitement purposes.
Right.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, you know, this Putin thing. I make warrior lists every year, and it's one of my New Year's traditions. And like 10 years ago, Putin was like on that list, but he was way down there, like number 9 or 10, like around where my prostate was. You know? And
now they've both enlarged.
Well, this is the thing. And now he's up around 2, maybe 3, and so is my prostate. And so I think that we don't need the PSA test anymore, gentlemen. I think we'll just use the Putin index.
And Putin sounds like something that lies right next to your prostate.
He does. And I tell you, if he goes, further into Ukraine, gentlemen, go see your doctor.
All right, on to your next quote.
Everybody go to Hobby Lobby today to buy glitter for your IUD.
That was our own Faith Saley referring to a big case argued where this week?
In the court.
Which court? Think a big, big case argued.
The Court of America?
No. No, she's thinking of Judge Judy. This is a different one.
No, I know how to translate from Canadian, and we're going to give her that point. Yes, it is the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court heard arguments in the case of Sebelius v. Hobby Lobby. At issue, the owners of the chain of arts and craft stores, based on their religious beliefs, do not want to provide certain kinds of contraception to their employees. Really, though, is there any more effective form of contraception than walking into an arts and crafts store? In fact, the Hobby Lobby was originally named Granny's Prophylactic Attic. I think I was watching a Viagra ad, and it said, if your erection lasts more than 4 hours, visit a Hobby Lobby.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, that scrapbooking is foreplay.
Maybe it depends on what your hobby is. I mean,
But when you get right down to it, mentioning all these things that they sell in the arts and crafts store.
Oh, I see.
Couldn't an employee or a customer make their own contraception? Paper mache works great. Stay away from the googly eyes, though. Mm. During an amorous evening, are you wearing a rubber? Rubber cement, yeah. When you're in the mood and you have time to let it dry, try rubber cement.
I know a really off-color song along those lines. It goes like this. It's, Waltz Me Around, Willie Limerick. An impetuous young couple named Kelly are now forced to walk belly to belly because in their haste they use rye berry paste instead of petroleum jelly.
All available at the Hobby Lobby.
Yeah. I very seldom get to bring that out in polite
company. Yeah, I haven't heard that in a while, right?
I believe Scalia invoked that from the bench, actually, yeah. Here's your last quote.
Imagine basketball players striking before a Sweet 16 game, demanding shorter practices, bigger dorm rooms, and better food.
That was Senator and former Secretary of Education Lamar Alexander, alarmed by a decision made this week allowing who to unionize?
Basketball players from universities?
Well, not basketball players.
Baseball, sorry.
No, not baseball. It's football. College athletes, football players specifically from Northwestern University. The National Labor Relations Board has voted to allow the players at Northwestern to unionize. The theory is that they are paid with a scholarship. They have to work many hours playing football, and they should receive compensation for injuries. Now, people think this sounds crazy, but what it comes down to it, is there a better symbol for the union lifestyle than a football game? Brief periods of activity between long periods of fat guys just standing around.
How good is Northwestern?
They were okay. They're usually the punching bag of the Big
Ten. That's what I thought.
Yeah,
I mean, they probably need to get organized in some sense.
All right, Carl. How did Anna do?
Two correct answers. So, Anna, I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or home answering machine. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations, Anna.
Thank you.
And as I said, all our guests, keep blowing up those demons.
I will.
We want to remind everyone to join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium, or really, I'm not here most weeks, but they want to remind everyone to join them most weeks here at the Chase Bank Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find the link at the website, waitwait.npr.org. And right now, panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, we'll go to you. The team behind Google Glass has spent years developing the technology. Well, now they're finally making Google Glass less what?
Less dorky looking?
That's exactly right, yeah. Less ugly. Mm.
Google has always put style second. Look at their bare bones homepage, and who could forget that first high-waisted version of Google Pants? Well, finally, Google has wised up. They're partnering with an Italian designer to ensure that when a Google Glass wearer has their Google Glasses punched off their face, the glasses are extremely fashion forward.
So they're going to be actually fashionable glasses? Like you see somebody with these on, you might not know that they were web surfing while they're in conversation with you or whatever it is they do.
People won't want that. They want to look as obnoxious as possible, surely.
That is true. The information is right there on your glasses. But Google Glass reminds me of sort of the beer helmet or the idea behind the beer helmet where you drink the beer out of the helmet. Just some guy saying, I want the things I want. I want them on my face.
You know, when you put it that way, Mike, I totally get it.
Yeah.
Does anybody remember the Brock umbrella?
Yeah, Lou Brock.
Lou Brock.
Lou Brock. I had one. Yes. I mean, I talked to
him. It was a hat with a little umbrella.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, that was technology.
Yeah.
You could just wear that all the time, and it looked kind of cute. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I saw that in the Museum of Celibacy.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Kerry O'Connor, and Roy Blunt Jr. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago and filling in for Peter Sagal from Slate.com, it's Mike Pesca.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you are on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Who's this?
This is Lewis from Minneapolis.
Hey, Lewis. Thank you for joining us. What do you do up there in Minneapolis besides shiver?
Not much. Sometimes I make it to work. I work in the education department of a large literary arts nonprofit center.
Really?
A literary arts nonprofit center.
Yeah.
Isn't that redundant somewhere?
It depends on the fiscal year.
Yeah.
It's nice to have you with us, Lewis. You're going to play a game in which you must try to tell the truth from fiction. What is the topic, Carl?
Come with me to the most magical place on earth.
Forget Buckingham Palace or the pyramids at Giza. No one's going there anymore. This week, we read about a new tourist destination attracting people from all over the world. Guess the real site, and you'll win the eighth wonder of the world, Carl's voice, on your home answering machine or voicemail. First up, Roy Blunt Jr.
Centuries ago, sensation seekers in London would drop in on Bedlam, the hospital where insane people were locked up, to watch the lunatics howl and bang their heads against the bars. I don't know of any tourist destination quite like that today, but if that sort of thing interests you, check out Manhattan Night Court in downtown New York City. Every night there, about 70 folks who have just been nabbed for various offenses are arraigned. Some are granted bail, others denied it. And more spectators, reported the Associated Press this week, are coming to see the show. Night Court, unlike the Empire State Building or glimpses of Donald Trump, is, quote, something that feels really underground and unique, says Regis St. Louis, the incongruously named author of Lonely Planet New York. This week, a visitor from Ranfurly, New Zealand, was surprised to see that she was sitting near people in handcuffs. Now, it might take handcuffs to get you or me to sit through most Broadway shows today, but this was downtown. These people were waiting to learn whether they would spend a head-banging night in jail.
NYC Night Court as a tourist draw. That's from Roy Blunt Jr. Your next story of a new tourist attraction comes from Kerry O'Connor.
Dave's convenience store in Hooksett, New Hampshire, looks like an ordinary quickie stop until you see the grammatically challenged sign in the window, the home of Smell the Ham. And then you go inside and there's an elaborate pink shrine worthy of a saint's relic. And in the middle of it is a dried, grayish piece of deli ham covered in clear plastic. A glance at the guest book shows the ham has been sniffed by tourists from Canada, Japan, Brazil. Oh, yeah, they all smell the ham, says Dave Betancourt, the proprietor and owner of the ham. The question asks itself, why? In 2004, Dave says he picked up the piece of then-fresh ham and sniffed it. As he did, a mail truck crashed through the front of the store, missing him by inches. I'm not a religious man, said Betancourt, so I credit the ham. Since then, the ham has become a legend. Brides stop by to smell the ham on the way to the church. The high school girls' basketball team has been undefeated since they all ham-sniffed last year. And Dave sold a winning lottery ticket to a ham sniffer last year as well. Dave doesn't question the ham's power. It's one of life's mysteries.
A helpful, almost holy ham from Kerry O'Connor. And your last story of a new attraction worth the trip comes from Tom Baudette.
Watch for that pothole on Route 9 used to be a warning to drivers. These days, it's an invitation for visitors to southern Vermont to witness a road hazard so infamous it has become a destination all its own. The sleepy little village of West Brattleboro, known mostly for its left turn lane, is on the main route to some of Vermont's busiest ski resorts. The weekend parades of BMW crossovers and Escalades from New York and New Jersey have created a pothole of such frame-wrenching, tongue-biting proportions that people are now stopping to have their pictures taken beside it, and not always for insurance purposes. A shrine of expensive bent and ruined alloy rims is taking shape on the shoulder, and a Volvo wagon with two flat tires and some kind of goo on the dashboard has been abandoned a short distance away. State maintenance crews have either given up on fixing it or they think it's funny to watch because the famous Route 9 pothole only gets bigger and uglier as the weeks go by. This week, Secretary of the Agency of Natural Resources, Deb Markovitz, responded to a petition that the pothole be preserved and turned into a state park by saying simply, "That might be the stupidest thing to cross my desk all winter, and that's saying something."
Okay, Lewis, I know you're hurrying out to AAA to get a triptych for each of these three attractions, but you can only go to one. You've got Roy's NYC Night Court as an attraction, you've got Kiri's Heaven Sent Ham, and you've got Tom's particularly popular pothole. Which one is real?
As much as people in Minneapolis have come to revere their potholes this season, I am going to go with Roy's story about NYC Night Court. I've seen people turn up from some weird things.
All right. To find out the correct answer, we spoke to someone familiar with the real story.
Tourists have climbed to the top of the Empire State Building. They're looking for something unusual, so why not go to Night Court?
That was Regis St. Louis, the author of The Lonely Planet Guide to New York City, explaining why New York's Night Court is the new Broadway. Lewis, you nailed it. Way to go.
Well, thank you so much.
And you have also earned a point for Roy Blunt Jr., and you've won the prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your answering machine. Lewis, thank you for playing with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye.
And now the game where we assemble the greatest talents in the world of science, scholarship, and the arts. We make them answer questions unbecoming their exalted status. It's not my job. These days, the word maestro, virtuoso, and prodigy get thrown around pretty easily. So do the words claymation and uncoupling, but that's not my point. Because violinist Itzhak Perlman is a maestro, a virtuoso, and a prodigy. He's played for presidents and the Queen of England, but of course the culmination of a career that's taken Itzhak Perlman around the world is for him to be right here, right now with us. Itzhak Perlman, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much.
So I always like to get into the origin story, and from what I understand, and you fill in what I don't understand, as a boy in Israel, you so badly wanted to play the violin, but you were turned away from the conservatory because a three-year-old, you were too small to actually hold a violin. Does Wikipedia have any of that right?
Where did you read this?
I don't know.
Well, it's actually true.
Ah.
No, I was, you know, I wanted to play when I was three or three and a half, you know, and it was a little too early. These days, it's actually not, you know, you see a lot. If you look at YouTube, you see a lot of three-year-olds playing. But at that time, things were a little more normal, So
there you were. You were, as a young child, you were denied and you wanted to do it, and you were denied and you wanted to do it. And I know you teach young children now. Do you think that there's something to, you know, crafting greatness to make it, to make the barrier to entry into a field even a little bit harder than it is now?
Well, no, I mean, I don't really, I mean, the teaching, I mean, I enjoy teaching young kids. You know, we have a program that my wife started called the Problem in Music Program, where I teach young promising string players. And I think that, you know, when you have the talent, it's good. You know, it's easy. But, you know, talent is, you know, the level right now of playing is so high, and everybody. Now, there are a lot of people who really play so well. So that, I don't think that's a problem. I think that's very good.
Do you enjoy playing other instruments, banjo, something like that?
No, I'm just a one-instrument player. I know, I've been known to play a blender, but, you know, but I basically play the violin.
And what's your opinion on the electric violin?
It's okay, as long as you can play it well. You know, I mean, if you play something well, I don't care what it is. I mean, I don't play it. Like, I tried. It's actually interesting, and that's all I can say about it. But I'm an acoustical person.
And how often is this, like, a once-a-day, once-a-week thing that you're asked to play The Devil Went Down to Georgia?
Well, once a year, and today's the day.
And following up on that question, if you were asked to fiddle against the devil where you were wagering your soul, what prize would you ask for in return?
A good meal at some nice restaurant, I guess.
That's confidence, people. Soul against a good meal.
Yeah.
Who would sound better, the second best violin in the world as played by the best player, or the best violin in the world as played by the second best player?
It's the other one.
Yeah.
Playing is playing, you know. It's, you know, to tell a very funny story about the great Yasha Heifetz, you know, he played a concert and the lady came backstage and she said to him, "Mr. Heifetz, your violin sounded so good tonight." And he picked up the violin and he said, "Funny, I don't hear anything."
So when you teach a young child, even an older child, how can you tell if he or she is great or is going to be great?
First of all, there is an innate musicality that you hear immediately, you know, and it doesn't matter the level of playing, but you can already hear that something there, that they are being affected by the music. You know, so, you know, sometimes, you know, when we see tapes of people who wants to come into our program, we see even the look on the face when they hear a particular harmony, and that already tells you that somebody has got this musical feel, you know. And of course, the passion is very, very important, and that's really, it's something that you can't really describe. You have to sort of hear it in order to see what it is. And then, of course, there is the challenge of the development. You know, if you hear somebody who's 12 who's amazing, you say to yourself, you know, I hope that they've survived their gift and that they continue to be amazing when they're 18 and 19 years old. You know, that's always a problem, how you develop through these years.
Yeah, that's actually pretty profound and inspiring, and it brings me back to the idea of a fiddle made of gold. Let's just do the math for a second. Now, the density of gold is 35 times the density of wood, and a fiddle or a violin weighs about 400 grams. So a fiddle made of gold would weigh about 30 pounds. Mm-hmm. At a price of $42 per gram, right now a fiddle made of gold would be worth $588,000. My question to you is, how much is your Stradivarius worth?
More. And besides, you know, with the fiddle of gold, I'm going to have to be strictly playing heavy repertoire. So, you know, like, you know, Brahms, Beethoven.
Willie Nelson's guitar has got friends' autographs all over it. You know, do you do anything like that with your...
No. All right. Very funny.
Just thought. Okay, if you're on a desert island and the only instrument there was a banjo,
What would I do?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll try and find something to eat.
All right, well, let's play. Itzhak Perlman, let's play a game that we're calling...
You're No Hellboy.
Sure, you may be an expert. I'm going to say you are an expert on Itzhak Perlman, but how much do you know about the actor Ron Perlman? Of Hellboy and Beauty and the Beast and Sons of Anarchy, we're going to ask you three questions about the craggy-faced actor. Answer two of them correctly, and you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Itzhak playing for?
Itzhak is playing for Betsy Dowd of Niles, Michigan.
All right, you ready to play?
Okay, Betsy, let's go.
Let's go, Betsy. Here's your first question. In addition to playing the Beast, Ron Perlman is perhaps best known for playing Hellboy in the Hellboy series. Big fans of those movies can do what? A, attend Hellboy summer camp where they learn to track supernatural beings. B, get a Hellboy permit from the Presbyterian Church, allowing them to say the H word without punishment. Or C, get special edition Hellman's Hellboy's mayonnaise, which is red but still tastes like mayonnaise. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I mean, if I was following what... my brain tells me, I would say three because it involves the mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. However, I would take a chance on number one.
The summer camp.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Thank you.
There is a Hellboy summer camp outside of Portland. So as we mentioned before, Ron Perlman is known for his distinctive face. When you Google Ron Perlman looks like... which of these is a way that Google finishes the phrase for you? Ron Perlman looks like A, Rhea Perlman, B, Donkey Kong, C, an Easter Island head.
Oh, my God. I can tell you Rhea Perlman is absolutely no.
No.
So we know. So it's between two and three. Can it give me the two and the three again, please?
Do you think, or do you think that Google thinks... that Ron Perlman looks like Donkey Kong or an Easter Island head?
Easter Island head or Donkey Kong? What's Donkey
Remember
Kong?
Remember the demo?
Is Donkey Kong the game?
It's a video game with a large-faced ape.
Okay, that's what I'm going to say.
You're right, it is Donkey Kong. I don't know, parents. I mean, wouldn't you rather have your kids know about video games from the 80s than be the world's greatest violinist?
Ron, I forgot about those games. Yeah. You know, I mean, I've already forgotten them. I'm now into the Sugar Crash or whatever you call that.
Candy Crush, yeah. Sorry, the maestro could not play tonight. He's just exploding bananas on level 243.
I wish.
Ron Perlman is not only an actor, he's also directed episodes of Beauty and the Beast, and he runs his own production company. How does Ron Perlman describe his directing style? A, I like to lure actors in with the beauty, then I show them the beast. B, I don't like working with me. I would punch myself in the mouth if I had to take my direction. C, I honestly have no idea what I'm doing, and I'm scared. Please don't publish this.
It's probably wrong. I'll take two.
That is correct. Letter B. He punched himself in the mouth. Fortunately for Ron Perlman, he looks like someone who could take a punch. Carl, how did Itzhak do?
Three correct answers, so Itzhak, you win for Betsy Dowd. Congratulations.
You did it, Itzhak. Thank you so much. Congratulations. I'm sure this ranks right up there with all the achievements and the presidents and the queens and the awards.
Tell me, what does Betsy win? You know, I want to know. I'm so curious.
Carl's voice on the answering machine and a free pass to Candy Crush level 243.
No.
Itzhak Perlman is hosting Bows and Batons, a four-day music retreat at Gideon Putnam Resort in New York. Itzhak Perlman, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Kerry O'Connor, and Roy Blunt, Jr. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago and filling in for Peter Sagal from Slate.com, it's Mike Pesca.
Thanks, Carl. In just a minute, Carl practices conscious uncoupleting in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from this week's news. Roy, as the economic recovery continues at a glacial pace, we're beginning to see signs of dangerous inflation. In fact, as soon as next month, we may see 100% inflation where?
I'm sorry. What in an area? A
100%. I'll give you a hint.
Good.
Do not pass go.
Monopoly game.
Yes, that is correct.
Wow.
Inflation in Monopoly. If you pass go, you may soon collect $400, which is good news because you're totally underwater on your house in Marvin Gardens. And you just lost your job at the bank because you keep making bank errors in the customer's favor. The $400 bonus, that's just one of the many changes in store as Hasbro is allowing the public to vote on new rules based on house rules, the rules people play with. So this is what my suggestion were to be if we were to change Monopoly. So you'd just play Bizarro Monopoly. So all the streets would be named after the worst streets in Nevada and Florida and Arizona where all the houses are in foreclosure. And the electric company would be Enron. And the railroad would be the Chicago Transit Authority headed for O'Hare. And at the end, whoever has the worst portfolio of belly-up assets gets bailed out by the government and wins the game.
Ah.
Oh. Too big to fail-opoly. Roy, I'm going to break form a little bit. I'm going to ask you a couple of quick questions. Do you like horror movies?
Yes.
Have you ever traveled around another country alone?
Yes.
Would it be fun to chuck it all and go live on a sailboat?
No.
Now, the big question that ties these all together is those three questions are keys to finding what?
Inner peace. you mean it's hiring people?
No, I'll give you a hint. It's a many splendored thing. It lifts you up where we belong.
Love.
Yes, yeah. Love. Finding true love. According to the founder of OkCupid, agreeing with your date on those three questions means that you have a bright romantic future because nothing says true love like a loner on a boat watching Saw.
Ooh.
Christian Rutter, the founder of OkCupid, says other dating sites like Match and eHarmony and Farmers Only waste time and money by asking hundreds of questions to their users. Just cut to the chase. Ask your date those three questions and subtly work them in during the getting to know you chat. Like, so, what do you do? Where'd you grow up? Do you like horror movies? Do you like traveling alone? Do you like sailboats? Any brothers or sisters?
Well, if they both say they want to go away alone on a sailboat. Great.
Tom, citizens of Ukraine have been boycotting Russian goods since the invasion, but one new protest may actually get results. Ukrainian women are banding together and boycotting what?
Russian-speaking men.
More specifically, it's
Russian
like,
soldiers.
It's like from Russia without love.
Well, they're withholding sex.
Yes.
Well, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Did I have to just spell it out for you, Mike?
Yeah. You know? I just wanted to hear you say it. The facts are, until Russia's takeover of Crimea is over, Ukrainian women will not have sex with Russian men. The protest is officially called in Ukrainian, "Don't Give It to a Russian." At this moment...
Well, that was a short meeting, that naming one, right? Yeah.
And right now, at this moment, I am just wondering how many Russian bars are filled with Russian men pretending they're Mexican. Boris is very popular name in Guadalajara. and I think the Ukrainian women also added to their boycott. Oh, yeah, and those guys wearing Google Glass.
Yeah. Well, the non-Russian Ukrainian stock just went up, though, right?
Yeah.
They're
out
there, hey, I ain't Russian.
I do support these Ukrainian ladies. In fact, I want to be explicit in my support. Tom, Roy, I hope you're with me in saying I will not have sex with Russian men.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Okay, yeah. Solidarity. Yeah.
Oh, I like that I will.
Yeah. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on our air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending the weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and the upcoming show at Tanglewood in Lenox, Massachusetts on August 28th. Also, check out the How to Do Everything podcast this week, How to Stop a Zombie Invasion. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Cindy.
How are you, Cindy?
I'm good. How are you?
Where are you calling from? What do you do there?
I'm calling from San Mateo, California, and I am a school principal.
And how is that going?
It's going well.
Yeah? How do you measure that? I hope through a lot of standardized tests.
Yes.
Well, welcome to the show, Cindy. And Carl is going to read three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two limericks, you are a winner. Here is your first limerick.
The nose has an ego that swells. It can sense more than language foretells. What makes this so sad is that most of it's bad. It can recognize 1 trillion...
smells.
Smells, yes. According to new research from Rockefeller University in New York, the human nose is capable of smelling 1 trillion different odors.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They had previously thought only 10,000 were able to be smelled. And it's really bad news because only about, say, 10 of those smells are good smells, like roses or freshly baked cookies or perhaps the smell of napalm in the morning. And the remaining 1,000 billions are different variations of the F train in July. Here's your next limerick.
A haven like this one combats cafes filled with moms and their brats. We answer your chow with a friendly meow. Our shop is just teeming with
cats.
Yes. If you're unsatisfied with the high prices and conspicuous lack of cat hair on everything at your nearest Starbucks, then check out Italy's Cafe Meow. Instead of unemployed writers charging their cell phones, the cafe is filled with rescued cats and unemployed writers charging their cell phones. The cafe takes its cat theme very seriously. For example, all employees must lick their hands before returning to work. And the cat baristas cough up shots of espresso. Oh, what? You wanted a double shot? Here is your last limerick.
Though it's claimed to make ventricles flutter, it has a great sizzle and sputter, just like the French with dairy will drench. Hooray, a resurgence of...
butter.
Butter, yes. A new study says... A new study says, and that, by the way, has to be the name of the next NPR show. A new study says. A new study says butter is back. It won't kill you. No more fake butter spreads and low cholesterol substitutions. So start slathering it on your toast again. This is the way of things. This is how everything we know about food goes, right? Everything that was supposedly bad is now actually good. Pretty soon there'll be a new study shows that cigarettes are good. Tanning beds are good. Arby's are good. New recommendation, you just ate. You have 15 minutes to go swimming.
I have a poem. It's not very long. Truer words were never uttered. Anything good is better butter.
Carl, how did Cindy do?
Perfect game there, Mike. She had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on her home answering machine.
Congratulations, Cindy.
Thank you so much.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place. Roy Blunt Jr. and Tom Beaudet each has 3 points. Kerry O'Connor has 2.
Kerry, so you're in third place. You're going to go first. The clock will start when I begin your question. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, fill in the blank. On Thursday, President Obama unveiled new surveillance rules for the blank.
NSA.
Correct. On Thursday, Connecticut became the first state in the country to raise the blank to $10.10 an hour.
Minimum wage.
Got it. 3 members of President Obama's blank were sent home from Amsterdam after one was found passed out in a hotel hallway.
Secret Service detail.
Yes. Because of its handling of its car's faulty ignition switches, multiple lawsuits were filed against automaker blank.
GM.
Yes. A wealthy owner just claimed his luxury yacht from a Swedish harbor after leaving it there because he blanked.
He forgot where he parked.
Absolutely correct. Forgot he had a yacht. As a settlement for price fixing, customers of Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other retailers receive credits this week for past blank purchases.
E-books.
Correct. On Tuesday, singer P. Diddy announced he was changing his name back to blank.
Puff Daddy.
Correct. This week we learned a teacher in Belgium keeps his students from misbehaving by threatening them with blank.
The Justin Bieber tickets.
Game of Thrones spoilers.
Whoa.
The teacher has read all the books, so he knows exactly who's going to die, how they're going to die, where to send the raven. And for every infraction, another death spoiler goes up on the blackboard. This has proven a lot more effective than when he threatened to write down the character who gets naked in the new episode of Girls. Good round, Carl. How did Kerry do?
Kerry had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. She now has 16 points, and Kerry has taken the lead.
All right. Okay, we have flipped a coin. Roy has elected to go next. Roy, fill in the blank. First Lady Michelle Obama and her daughters fed pandas on the last day of their visit to blank.
China.
Correct. The operator of that train that derailed this week at Chicago's blank airport admitted to dozing off before the crash.
O'Hare.
Yes. A report released, commissioned by Chris Christie this week, said that there was no evidence to implicate blank in the New Jersey bridge closing scandal.
Chris Christie.
Correct. After just 25 games, all the fans who signed up to win $1 billion by picking a perfect blank bracket were eliminated.
NCAA.
That's right, March Madness bracket. After she choked on a piece of hard candy, a woman in Britain was saved when her dog blanked.
The Heimlich.
That is right.
Oh, really?
This week, the IRS announced that the digital currency blank will be taxed as property.
Bitcoin.
Yes. In a blog post on Goop.com titled Conspicuous Uncoupling, actress blank announced her separation from Coldplay singer Chris Martin.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Correct. An Australian man who threw his drug stash out of his 14-story window during a police raid was busted anyway when it blanked.
Bounced.
Landed on a cop's head.
Oh.
The man thought he'd be in the clear if he threw his drug Tupperware out of the window, but no. As for the policeman below, it was like that classic Weather Girl song, It's Raining Meth. Carl, how'd Roy do?
Roy had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 17 points, and Roy has the lead.
All right. Set the stage, if you would, Carl. How many does Tom need to win?
7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
All right. All order.
All right, Tom, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, President Obama traveled to Rome for his first meeting with blank.
The Pope?
Yes. Treacherous conditions hindered rescue efforts after homes were destroyed by a blank in Washington State.
Mudslide.
Correct. After it paid $2 billion for a virtual reality company, stock prices for the social networking site blank fell.
Facebook.
Correct. This week, jurors in New York convicted the son-in-law of blank on terrorism charges.
Osama bin Laden.
That is right. In Michigan, the tables were turned when a large pothole swallowed a blank.
Oh, it's the pothole maintenance crew's truck.
That's right, a pothole repair truck. Ooh. Astronomers announced this week that they've discovered a new blank on the edge of the solar system they've nicknamed Biden.
It's a heavenly body, and it's a planetoid, I think.
Yeah, okay, dwarf planet. We'll take planetoid, yes. The magazine Vogue was criticized this week for its cover featuring blank, blank Dashian and blank Kane blank.
What? I think even with all those hints, I might screw this up. I think it's Kanye West and Kim Kardashian.
That is correct.
And maybe the kid, I don't know.
Indiana police suspected a man may have been drunk driving when they found him behind the wheel blanking.
Driving drunk.
Wearing his pants as a shirt. According to the arresting officers, Brian Hill was, quote, wearing only a T-shirt, underwear, and one sock. He did have pants on, but they were on his arms. Both arms were inserted into the legs of his jeans.
Oh, boy, have we all been there.
Or as I call it, Thursday. Police say the man tried to make them think he was sober, but they could tell he was just talking out of his ass.
That's not drunk driving. That's just drunk dressing.
Carl, how did Tom do? Well enough to win?
He had 7 correct answers, so co-champions are Roy Blunt Jr. and Tom Bodess.
Good work, guys.
In just a minute, we will ask our panelists, now that Russia's out of the G8, what will they join? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front line of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. And Angie's List, providing reviews of local roofers, painters, landscapers, and plumbers to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes the limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our CFO is Ann Nguyen. Our intern is Seth Cab for Cutie Kelly. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Stolarchek and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover, Miles Dornbos, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction, Lorna White. Special thanks this week to Gary Yeck. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, no more G8. What will Russia join? Roy Blunt Jr.
It's going to take a little sort of change of pace and join the fashion firm Dolce & Gabbana.
Kerry O'Connor.
Russia will join the cast of the Real Housewives of the former USSR.
Tom Baudet.
Well, they're going to form their own organization and begin recruiting new members for the Association of Soviet-like States Happy to be Attacked and Taken Over, or also known as Asshat.
Well, if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Roy Blunt Jr., Kerry O'Connor, and Tom Baudet. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Mike Pesca. Peter Sagal will be back with you next week. This is NPR.